December 20th, 2015, SWAT for Pedro show. Pedro show here in Portland, though, not Pedro. And I'm
Portland,
a little
Oregon,
less younger.
Oregon, not Maine.
Right. Well, you know what? There's Portland's all over.
Yeah.
Almost like a generic term, the Portland.
Winter is a port. Yeah.
I think there's a lot of Lincolns, too.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of Buffaloes.
And Buffaloes, okay. Yeah. And Springfields.
Right.
Good people, you're hearing Richard Meltzer, my guest, here in Portland. How long have you been living here?
It's 20 years now.
20 years!
Yeah. And it's changed a lot.
Well, you know, early 80s when I first played here, and it was only one band, Satyricon.
Right.
There was like 40 bands.
Right, yeah. But it's like, you know, just the town used to be, when I moved here, it's like you had actual beatniks, you know, from the day, were still alive and practicing here. And you had it's a kind of very culturally egalitarian place, whatever that means. Everybody tolerated everybody else's shtick. And little by little, it just got to be, you know, a big part of it was, you know, that it was simply off the beaten path, and, you know, it's not Seattle, it's not San Francisco. But little by little, it's gone out of its way to try to be like everywhere else.
Really?
Yeah, I mean,
I know a lot of young people are attracted to move here.
It's become very suburban, you know, more, you know, just hard to describe what that means, but it's kind of a, you know, they have whatever the next step after yuppie is for people who have a little bit of money and not that much imagination. There's a whole subset of, you know, like people in 20s, 30s who, you know, just dress so stupid looking, you know, out of like the J. Crew catalog or whatever. And it's gotten more and more like that. Like, it just isn't, it used, when I moved here, there were guys who looked like they were renegades from the WWF. You know, and now everybody is, everybody's groomed more than they
groomed.
There used to be slops here, that's what I liked. And there aren't as many.
Yeah, because how many years were you in SoCal, LA?
I was there for 20 years there.
Okay, and that you came straight from New York City, right?
I did 30 years in New York, 20 in LA, and 20 here.
Isn't that a trip?
Yeah.
Wow, you can demonstrate.
Yeah.
In Detroit Street.
That's right.
By Peaks, not far from Peaks.
That's right, yeah.
I never got to go, but I remember you telling me.
Yeah.
What was that pad like? Did you like
it? It was kind of like, at one point, they decided that they were going to increase the amount of parking on the street by angular parking.
Right.
and it ended up with five fewer spots because they didn't know how to do it.
So when it was after 20 years down there, I got to get out of here. I remember you telling me, like, people talk about people who weren't what they were.
Right.
Like, the waiter wasn't really a waiter. He's really a...
He's an actor. Just, you know.
Right. So when you were thinking of pads, you were thinking Portland's off the beaten path.
It was. Well, I came here the first time to visit in week before Thanksgiving in '94.
Okay.
21 years ago. And the sky was black. It was wet. It was cold. And I never was big on sun, you know. And so I thought, this is for me. And I mean, speaking of sun, you know, like the great Chris Burden, the, you know, the performance artist guy.
He just passed away, right?
He went to have himself nailed to the back of a Volkswagen, had himself shot. He crawled through 100 yards of broken glass in his underwear. What kills him? The sun. Yeah, you got melanoma from too much tan.
His last, one of his last art things was, it's at LACMA, it's street pole lights.
Yeah.
And somebody told me he stole that idea, some other dude did that.
Who knows?
So maybe a pastiche.
Right.
Did you know him?
Yeah, he was on my radio show.
That's right.
And I was.
That's right. You were trying to flesh him out.
And I was on. On some TV, some, like, you know, I don't know what it was, some cable or so thing.
Well, you guys
had a bunch of people talking about TV, and they had a guy whose thing was rolling a TV up a hill and then rolling it down a hill, and he did. And what his thing was, he was trying for that event was. Showing, he got one of these like Boy Scout kits with make your own fire with friction, you know. and so he was trying to make, you know, he took the time that they allotted him, he wasn't a fire yet.
Wasn't there one where you guys were playing cards?
No.
A poker game?
Little Arts Poker Party.
That was a good show. Yeah. That's the same show. Okay.
Yeah. No, it wasn't the same show. Hosted by Lord Fine.
Okay. You didn't really play cards.
Sometimes we would pretend for about, you know, just deal on me, look at you, you know. But at his home, we used to play maybe three times a year at our arts house. But the show was good as long as they let us smoke cigars, and after a while they wouldn't. We
couldn't do stinking up the bed.
Right.
Now that was a trippy. People listening, you got to understand, there was a time where the cable companies actually had to try to sell their racket, and one of it was, we will give you access. They also said they weren't going to have commercials.
Right.
They ended up.
Well, they'd also say, I remember seeing somebody was doing a show, you know, just after or just before the Little Arts Poker Party was being taped. There was these people who were basically at a show where they were definitely, the show was nothing but a commercial for the Parisian Room. But they were not allowed to mention the Parisian Room. So they mentioned, oh, when you're on, whatever was that on. What's that on La Brea?
It was. Brea. So there's a post office.
So when you're driving down La Brea, you know, great music awaits. And,
you know, there's a post office there now.
Okay.
They tore it down.
Right.
Yeah, it's on La Brea when you come down the hill.
Right.
Blair Hills.
And they got, you know, stopped. Okay, stop. You're being too specific. And,
How long did that show run?
At least 10 years.
Yeah. Is there an archive of them somewhere?
I have maybe, I probably did 50. I probably have 15 of them saved.
Like on VHS or something?
Yeah,
Wow. Maybe I got a...
There's a terror, and it was the other one I used to do was Victoria Looseleaf's show. You know her? She played harp.
Harp.
And she, big harp.
Yeah.
And she would do harp aerobics. And she... And she would have Harvey Pekar. She knew him from Cleveland.
Yeah.
He was on a lot. But she had this guy whose name I can't remember, who was some old hippie who did balloon sculptures. And this
like poodles?
Yeah. That's about it. And he was on, this was when Clinton was running against Bush Sr., I guess. And it had this big thing with Cop Killer, the song
Ice
Cop
Tea.
Killer, and at the same time Sister Soldier. One of the, Clinton picked on one. I mean, it was whatever it was. They were picking on these two musics, and this guy, whatever his name was, with the balloons, says, "I can't stand. How dare anybody record something even just called Cop Killer?" And so I just cussed him out, and I think they had to bleep the whole show. It was just, so that would have been 92 or something.
And was it like an access show too?
Yeah.
Can you believe that they would let anybody just come up? Because they had to, right?
That was, well, if you pay for the time.
Yeah, but they had to have it open.
Yeah.
Because the community had to be. That was one of the little things about why we should own the monopoly. That.
They still do. They don't.
That's over.
Huh?
That's over. And how many cable companies are there? Two.
Huh?
Right. There's Cox. There's Warner. Or maybe they're the same.
I don't even know. I don't have cable, but what, Comcast? Is that one of those?
That's one of them.
The one in this town. Comcast.
And then, okay. And there's Time Warner.
Yeah.
But maybe they're merged. Who knows?
The
big company world.
Right.
So you. You're not big on TV.
Well, it's just funny, I had this wife who for 5 years, and she got, somebody gave her a TV. Somebody who she worked with said, "Hey, you want a TV? We've got this huge TV." And neither of us really watched it much, but we'd find that they used to have, locally, they have, we didn't get cable, but antenna TV, you want to call it. There was one station that had weird sports,
Well, like camber toss.
Well, what do you call it? What's the one on the ice, like bowling on ice? What is it called?
But you got a broom.
Yeah,
that shit. I don't know what it's called. It's pretty intense.
And they showed the special Winter Olympics, where they had. Or whatever it's called, for disabled skiers. They had one-legged skiers, and they had, skiers without arms, so you didn't have balls. And we watched that, and then they took that station off. And so little by little, it got to where there wasn't much to watch. And then my wife leaves me, and 2 years ago, and I have this, I still have the the remote from this TV, and little by little the buttons go out, and it's down to I can only get channel 6, local CBS.
Okay.
It's the only channel I can get, and so I look online to see is there going to be anything this week that I want to see. Usually not. You know.
There's Turner.
Right.
And there's no commercials. And he plays all movies.
Okay.
So that's the only TV you watch.
Right.
And it's a way I can relate with my mom. She knows about all these people that were in the movie. I think in the old days, movie people were more in the average dude's minds.
Right.
Knowing all about their lives and all that. I think right. Hollywood might have cultivated it.
Sure.
That's part of the whole.
Right.
And so I can kind of ask her about these.
Right.
People and all the backstory, and she knows
right.
all this.
I've been renting, you know, because I can only get this one channel, so I've been renting a lot of Japanese films. And I remember you were always talking about the Women of the Dunes.
Yeah.
But it's an earlier guy I never really knew called Ozu,
mm-hmm.
and he made. So I've seen a whole bunch of. He did silent gangster movies. In the 30s, when they already had sound, but a lot of Japanese directors thought that's a passing fantasy.
Right.
But he has this great, and he has the most dapper-looking gangsters, you know, much better than the Edward G. Robinson movies.
Okay.
They're just terrific-looking gangsters.
Wow.
And, you know, same years. And he has this one called Dragnet Girl that's about, a guy and his gal and, committing... You know, not too horrendous crimes. They don't kill people. They do stick ups and tie people up and whatever. But the gal thinks we got to get out of this. It's maybe that was even what the code was that movies about criminals.
Yeah.
You can be what's the word? Treat them as human beings, but at the end they have to. Turn themselves in.
A lesson's got to be taught.
Like in the U.S., the gangsters die at the end. But here it's like they actually turn themselves in.
One of my most favorite shows is Perry Mason.
Right.
Never went to the jury. They'd always say, okay, I did.
Right. But so when they turn them, they turn themselves in, and the guy says to her, oh, it'll be a few years, but Howdy Party says, it'll be like taking a long bath. There's a lot of dirt to wash.
that's kind of profound.
Right.
So, like the traditional silent, would there be a card, placard?
Yeah.
For the spiel.
Right. But he's funny, this guy Ozu, because he thinks of himself as very international.
How would you spell?
O-Z-U.
Okay.
Yeah, his first name is Yasuhiro or something.
Yasuhiro? Okay.
And he lived into the early 50s, I think. And he has just, the characters are just very, reasonable and, they're humans who commit crimes. and he has one where a cop, this guy has just pulled some ridiculous. His daughter's dying.
Yeah.
So he needs money for a doctor. So
right.
he has to, pull a stick up.
Yeah.
And the cops are on to him. And so
Kisatsu.
So they finally descend on his home, and the daughter's like all sweaty and, can we pay the doctor? And so this cop takes pity on him and says, I could take you in right now, but I'll stay here until the doctor arrives. And then he stays through that because he's just so taken with the human experience.
Right.
And at the very end, he says, look, I can put the cuffs on, or, well, let's just walk to the station. Would you like a smoke? A nice cup.
Smoking was big over there. The teachers did it in the classrooms.
Yeah, oh yeah.
The doctors.
They did. I had my teachers.
Yours?
Did
okay,
it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was over here too.
Okay. Yeah.
Have you seen any of the Zatoichi?
What are some titles?
There was like 23 of them made. It's in the 60s.
Okay.
It's a blind.
Oh,
that's swordsman.
Yeah, I've seen one of those.
You gotta see them.
Yeah.
You gotta see them because
right.
they're kind of like this human thing.
Right.
I mean, he drinks, he goes. Whorehouse, he works for Yakuza and stuff, but
yeah.
he always you know, does the right thing, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't talk loud or kind of soft. Everybody else is screaming their heads off, crazy ass. And,
right.
But this is the 60s, and you're talking 30s.
Yeah.
Show up. Because, yeah, okay, I got to check him
the
out.
The period is what? Show up.
Is
Hirohito's period?
But it's also when they're shooting
and
the army's
now?
Shooting
what is
prime
it
ministers.
Now? What's the
yeah? What is it called now?
Akihito.
That's who's the Tenno, the boss.
Okay.
Or emperor. But there was the politics was rough in those days. They were shooting the prime ministers.
Right.
And you know, it was the Tojo and all that military. So I wonder if that was a reaction to that, or it was promoted by that.
Right.
It was real rough stuff. A big fan. What about Kurosawa and the
50s? I saw this one. I think it's Stray Dogs. It's the one where a cop loses his gun.
Yeah.
Gets it back. It has a 7-minute thing in the early of the movie at a baseball game.
Yeah.
It just shows the thing in progress.
Sensibilities.
Yeah.
I don't think Pedro even has a video rental anymore.
Wow.
Like, that's all over. Huh. Yeah, that's over.
Boy, Chris, people do Netflix and that sort of thing?
Maybe. Yeah. I just, to tell you, there's not a pad.
Huh.
If there is a pad, there's one that I'm forgetting about, but they've all closed. There was big chains, right? There was a...
Blockbuster.
Yeah. All that's gone, all that. But even the little mom and pop ones.
Right.
If there is one, there's just one. But yeah, there's a bunch of. There's one near
you. How is Pedro itself physically looking compared to 20 years ago?
Pedro, you know about. You know, Joe Hill lived there 2 years.
Uh huh.
You know, we had a Wobbly. It's a bodega now, a little bit.
This is a Wobbly town once, once upon.
Get this, in 23, we also had Klan, and they marched on that.
Ah, wow.
If you're asking me about Pedro, these are some kind of things that trip me
your
out.
Your daddy was a sailor. That's a line from Land Ho by the Doors. My daddy was a sailor. He sailed the frozen seas.
But I think a rear admiral.
Right.
My papa's chief.
Yeah.
I remember one thing he told me. He said, "Boy, I have yet to see shit roll uphill."
Right. Yeah.
I remember, you remember Steve McQueen, Sam Pebbles.
Right.
Me and D. Boone's favorite movie. We couldn't tell what it was about. It was one of those ones that would be on two nights. It was so long, right?
Uh-huh.
I think the actual movie, there's an intermission where they just play the music, right? But they're having a talk, right? Missionary, some guy from England, and he's chowing there too with them, and they ask him, you know, his political views, and that's just look-see for the officers.
I was in the Boy Scouts. I hated the Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
But they'd have all these military kind of moments that every time they get together, about face.
Oh yeah, I know.
And I have this shrink who a therapist who, he's 5 years older than me. He was born in Hamburg during the war.
Whoa.
That was one of the towns along with Dresden that could firebomb. And
it was closer.
Right. And so anyway, he says he grew up reading anti-war novels. When he was a teenager, he read The Naked and the Dead and
Whoa.
From Here to Eternity.
Yeah.
He recommended From Here to Eternity. It's 1,000 pages. Oh, it's very good. And so lately we talk about he likes submarine movies.
Whoa.
So he says, Run Silent, Run Deep.
I remember that one.
So that's good. So he says, but have you seen Das Boot? I hadn't seen. You've seen that?
Yeah,
I never saw it until a few weeks ago.
Kind of claustrophobic.
Yeah. And
you know, they offered my pop, because he was nuke, so they offered him that dude. He said, no, fuck.
Yeah. Right. But that was
my pop told me never to join.
Right.
I'm not from, it's not a tradition. It was a way for him. He got a Red Bluff when he's 17 years old. There's no punk bands yet. You know?
Right.
So he joined Uncle Sam's band. He did 20 years of it. He said, never again volunteer yourself.
Right.
Navy.
I just, even the idea of the service. I was in service to my country. I was in,
What'd you think of Das Boot?
Oh, it was great. I mean, it was
ends up getting bombed.
Yeah, but it's like can't even, it even sinks.
But after all that right, they yeah. go through it.
Right, yeah.
The right. sausages hanging.
Right.
I mean,
bananas,
that.
Yeah.
Bananas.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
Can you imagine doing that? That duty pulling, that's what my pop said. You got to pull some kind
so
of
So my shrink says that he likes it because it's, he says, yeah, they're not presented as Nazis, they're soldiers.
Oh.
Yeah. He doesn't like the, you know, American movies with it.
Right.
Nazis.
In fact, it's still going on. Right. I know that when I was a boy, 60s, they're marketing to the generation, but we still have them. The ones, they were going after art or something, Brad Pitt.
Oh, yeah, saving civilization with art. Yeah. Oh, that one with the bastards.
Is that it?
What was it called, the Inglorious Bastards?
No, that's just killing Nazis. Right. The other one is saving the art.
Oh, that was somebody else.
Okay.
Yeah.
I walked out of both.
Right.
I don't really go to a lot of movies. I can watch like the old ones on TV.
Right.
So this guy, 75 years old. So yeah, World War II. He's a boy.
Right.
Damn.
And he ended up in the Merchant Marine in the U.S.
Yeah.
And
Pedro was big for that.
Yeah, and he.
We got a great monument.
He thinks of himself as a sailor. You know,
well,
because he did used to sail, and he's a nice guy, and he I give him some of my books, he reads them, you know.
Yeah. We got a monument to him. It's a guy coming down a ladder, you know, it's obviously from a helicopter, so right. You don't just see the ladder, and he's bringing a guy up, and then that guy, he's got the one hand holding his hand, he's letting go of his life jacket. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
I trust you, man. You're gonna get me out of this.
Yeah.
No guns.
Right.
Nope. It's real. But next to it is a barrel of some battleship thing, and it's bizarre because not only do they have one round coming out the end there,
yeah,
they got another round getting ready for the breach. So like infinity.
Yeah.
But this thing, and I think it was a father and son thing that made the sculpture, this guy coming down and bringing this guy out of the water, and he's letting go of his life jacket for public art.
Right.
I mean, look, come on. With from a bank, usually a giant paper clip.
Right. I never go to these, like, Clint Eastwood war movies, like, you know, Iwo Jima, Clint version. You know, and
well, what's with him anyway? The spaghetti ones were good that he was
very,
in.
Yeah, very good.
And he made that one for, Dexter Gordon.
Oh, it was
kind of. I think it was supposed to be like Bud Powell and.
That was. No, he did.
It was a composite character.
He didn't
character.
Do that one. That was a French guy did that. He did.
Oh,
he did the Charlie Parker movie.
That's right.
But the Bertrand Tavernier was the French guy who did. Dexter Gordon was playing.
Yeah.
Was supposed to be a composite of Bud Powell and Lester Young.
That's it. Pork pie. And I saw it, actually I saw him and a trio open up for Miles Davis at the Hollywood Bowl with Raymond.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I remember Miles was so strange. It was all covers, like Mike Jackson and Cyndi Lauper. And
oh, those things, yeah.
The Bassman, yeah, he was some fight with his publisher so he wouldn't do his tunes. And
right.
The Bassman did a solo on his knees. It was
that's okay.
Yeah. At this time, his bass players were writing music. It wasn't Marcus Miller, but maybe Lewis? I don't know. I can't remember. But I remember, you know, they'd be in some kind of jam.
Yeah.
And then you'd see him walk up to one of them. I mean, it's the Hollywood Bowl, so they're little. And also the chord would change.
Right.
Or if he had a synthesizer, he'd just hit one key and the whole band would.
Right.
Was the only time I got. Did you get to see Miles? That's the only time.
I also saw him a different time at the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh.
Where they had Gil Evans had his electric band opening for Miles.
Wow. In the book, he really likes him.
Right.
He said it's probably because he's Canadian or something.
Why not? Yeah.
Nobody picks where they're born. I don't give a shit about
that. Right.
I never have. Now, after you're born, you can have some say, maybe.
Yeah.
But not being born.
Right.
Yeah, what's your take on Miles?
Well, I just think my favorite Miles stuff is first half of the 50s.
Quintet.
You know, on Prestige and Blue Note, and I just, the stuff just sounds so immediate and, you know, as new as anything could be. And then he just perfected something that was already being superseded by Coltrane and Ornette, you know, and that whole...
He says mean things about Ornette in the book.
Right.
Right?
But I remember it was like at the time he had an album...
Quincy Troupe.
Right, right. He had an album, Seven Steps to Heaven.
Yeah.
Which was maybe 63 or one of those years. And at the same time, that was the same summer that I bought that, they put out Impressions, you know, Coltrane Post Miles. And and Ornette had some, you know, an album called Ornette on Tenor on Atlantic. Just terrific. And it was like, you know, his Miles was good, and he got himself a perfect quintet.
He knew how to pick a band, huh?
Yeah, but
I think he knew he was never going to be Diz, but I'm going to play with good guys.
Right. Well, I think he, you know, as far as beating Diz, he really had a terrific sense of the brass sound, and the, you know, the way he.
In the book, he says he got that from Frank Sinatra. The phrasing from Frank Sinatra.
Is that right? He's better than Frank Sinatra. But the other guy who was very good, died early, was, what was his name?
Clifford Brown. That's what he said was going to make.
Brown
before him.
He died of TB. What was his name? He was somebody who also played with Bird early on. He died in 50-51. And he was, they had these guys like... you know, the white guy who had a comeback at some point, Red Rodney. Red Rodney and other white people, the one they really dug was this guy who died, you know, I can't remember his name.
You write me an email and remember.
Right.
Because I'll check him out.
I have a lot of...
Does he talk about it in the Troupe book?
I don't remember.
Okay. I know some of that stuff is made up, but Beneath the Underdog.
Right, well, this trumpet player is in that.
Oh, he's in that,
He has a dialogue, his health stinks, and he's an atheist, and Mingus is trying to convince him not to.
Oh, yeah,
Whatever that guy's name is.
Yeah, but there's some, I like that book, though, it's written like music.
Right.
Whereas the Troupe one, it's told to.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Remember, he says, the motherfucker said, I said, motherfucker to me. And then Troupe says, you know, he had 14 different motherfuckers. It was all the way from good to lame.
Right.
And interesting. I got Georgie to read that. Remember on tour, the Minuteman drummer.
Yeah.
And he was into it. He didn't read a lot of books. He liked that one.
Right.
And, you know, we got all turned on. By the punk movement, we didn't know about any of that stuff.
Right. I'm still trying to figure out this guy who it was, but he did an album also. It was another guy, Howard McGee, who was another trumpet player from that period. Okay. And the two of them did a record, probably an EP, in the late 40s, two trumpets. And they had Tad Dameron, who wrote things for Miles, who was a piano guy, junkie.
Red Garland was his. Name
right.
Period, you said you like. What did you think about the?
And Wayne Kelly is good too.
Actually, in the book he said he didn't like playing with Red Garland. He bogarted. He liked Ahmed Jamal.
Oh yeah, but Ahmed Jamal was somebody who is still alive. In this town, they have the worst jazz station I've ever heard, KMHJ, Mount Hood Community College, listener supported crap. And they play Ahmed Jamal all the time. And, oh, the great Ahmed Jamal is coming here next summer, you know, get your tickets now. And I never could understand what Miles saw in him.
What do you think about, you know, John McLaughlin?
Yeah, I mean, that period, you know, it's like, you know, Bitches Brew and so forth. I found it listenable, but I just felt it was more the extension of the quintet period that it was the music itself.
Oh, you don't think it was fusion? Some people say that.
It got to be more and more fusion. You know, by the time of you know, these albums that, you know, Live in Japan with you know, just a wall of sound.
Yeah.
That stuff's fine, but it never really emotionally got it under my skin.
There's a bass player.
Yeah.
Michael Henderson.
Right.
I think he met him at the Apollo. I think he stole him from Stevie Wonder or something.
Okay.
Boop, 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 boop. I really liked him. He ended up like kind of this disco singer and stuff.
Right. But John McLaughlin ended up...
I saw that.
They played with Blue Oyster Cult several times because they're both on Columbia.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's right. Birds of Fire.
Yeah.
And I saw them play at the Long Beach Arena. It curtained off so it was smaller. Probably the anti-cave device.
Yeah.
I think Pure Food and Drug Act opened up. Huh. And I kind of liked it.
Right.
But I never got another record.
Red Miles, what I always liked was when I could hear that brass thing coming from somewhere in the sound.
Yeah.
And after a while, they weren't being mixed to give much prominence to his playing.
Yeah, right. But I can't believe that wouldn't be his decision.
Right.
It seemed like he ran the show.
Oh, yeah. He also wanted to show, like, Columbia when... they were signing these bands, you know, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, and there was a band, Billy Cobham was in a...
That's the Bobby Usher drummer.
Yeah, was in a band called Dreams. They were on Columbia.
Okay.
And they were very much like Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Oh.
And I remember seeing Miles. I went to a press party for Dreams, and Miles is there looking like, who can I steal from this band? And he got Billy Cobham.
See, I tell you, that's what I think. About his real talent, I mean, great.
Yeah.
Had his own trumpet sound, you're right. He had a sound. It was never forced. It seemed really natural, but he knew how to put dudes around him.
Yeah.
Because a lot of dudes, you know, the thing where you want to look good, so you put lame guys around you.
Right.
Miles wasn't about that.
Right. I also like the stuff he did with Gil Evans.
Yeah.
Sketches of Spain and the one called...
You know, he wanted to do that with Jimmy? That's what said in the treat book.
Miles Ahead.
Yeah, Miles Ahead.
And I heard that somebody got... It's a Japanese import of something he did in a studio with John Lee Hooker.
Whoa.
That is... It's sort of so rudimentary, it's like maybe they were just practicing and
the
tape was running. But it was released by some Japanese label.
But Jimmy never was too scared because he couldn't read... that's what's said in the true book.
Right.
I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, just what did I really like by Miles? They're just different albums like this one. One he did for Prestige that has Elvin Jones as his drummer. This is like 55 or somewhere. I mean, it was just like maybe it was Mingus with Mingus and Elvin Jones and Miles and, you know, somebody else. And
I think I've read about that.
Just interesting, you know.
I haven't heard it.
That he did. He did that big session with probably a Milt Jackson session. It was called Bags Group, with Monk was playing.
And called him the judge, huh?
And he just was so intimidated by Monk. Like Monk would just take one note and it would just shatter him. And so he says, you know, lay out. I don't want to hear you.
He talked about that in about Piano Bogart. It was too full.
Right.
In the troupe book, I remember. Elvin, have you ever seen this 22-minute thing called Different Drummer?
I don't know if I have.
Yeah, it's
just him.
It's early 70s. He's talking about growing up, you know, Thad and Hank, his brothers, and
right.
I guess his pop was a pastor, and Pontiac outside of Detroit.
Right.
And the drums were different colors, so it's like he's painting, he's playing. He shows you how he put together three card Monty.
Right.
With that kick drum and pattern and the polyrhythm means poly, Mary. Rhythm.
Well, he got a lot of what he did from Philly Joe Jones, who was...
In the book, they say that's how Miles lost his voice, was hollering at him, trying to tell him how to do sock cymbal. Because hi-hat used to be down here.
But he used to play, I mean, he had a very great sense of dynamics.
Well, Rob Carter comes in...
That Elvin really added to. He just took, you know... He amplified different aspects of Philly Joe.
Philly Joe, but speaking of Miles, I mean, incredible with him. Elvin talks about no one wanted to play with him because of his sense of time. And Ron Carter even has some little spiel in there where he says, you listen to pre-Elvin and post-Elvin. Raymond took me to see him maybe 15, 16. I've seen him so many times. Because he was living in Nagasaki, so his first gigs, jazz machine, right?
Right.
They have the kids with the iron on. Of course, Elvin's not wearing it. But, and it's not like the Buddy Rich tapes or something, but some of it kind of, I see Darryl actually go.
Speaking of Buddy Rich, you know, to me, a guy who's very much like him is, Ginger Baker. Have you seen his movie where
he breaks the guy's
plays face with everybody, you know?
No, but the guy who makes the movie, he breaks his nose or something with a cane.
Right. Yeah.
Go off. Did you go to Catalina's? You must have. The one on Coenda by the bookstore.
It was always.
Magazine.
I found it really unpleasant. It was always the clip joint. It felt like a clip joint.
Yeah, big time.
I saw Cecil Taylor there. I thought that was a great show there.
Yeah. That's the one thing about these guys going to
it. Byron Coley said that he was looking to reissue the.
Spielgusher.
Yeah, with Raymond drawing something.
Yeah, yeah. That's in the works. It's a tube, test tube or tube feeding records.
So you got any copies of that left that I could buy from you? Yeah.
I'll give you some.
Because there's always I've never had a calling card, but I'd love to have that as.
Okay. When I get home, Pedro, we got a hell ride after tonight's show.
Yeah.
Did you ever make the ride?
So which one?
Portland, SoCal.
Only coming up.
Okay, that's the only one you did. All the rest. Did you ever go back?
I visited.
Okay, that's right.
You saw me in Smegma.
That's right.
I went back maybe
three
times.
So in Smegma, you were riding in a van.
Right.
Okay, so that's the route I'm taking tomorrow.
Okay.
So when I get there.
But
right,
you go on one of these routes, is like it's all like the smell of the chicken shit along the road, right?
Kauschwitz. That's called the Harris Ridge.
Okay.
With the cow, they're laying in their own shit and stuff. Right. That's called the I-5, huh?
Right.
It unites us three Pacific states.
There's this woman named Caitlin Nee Donovan, folk singer from this town.
Yeah.
Who, I shouldn't say this really about her. She's a very suicidal person. She's just such. She's somebody who once was on that road and saw these cows suffering, and thought that she wanted to die, because she couldn't stand to see the suffering of cows. And her friend Wayne talked her out of it by saying, "The cows need you, even if you can't save them, they need your sympathy."
Right.
And so
empathy.
But it was that taking that road.
Somebody told me once, sympathy is patting you on the top of the head, where empathy you actually feel.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, terrible.
That sounds good.
Speaking of words, writing.
Am I writing? I'm writing a lot less.
Okay.
And the reason I'm writing a lot less is this wife of mine. 5 years, she didn't like my writing. And it was like, she not only disliked it, she hated it. And she'd say things to me like, it's too masculine and it's too negative. And so every time I try to do, sit, and she also just thought it's not a reasonable work, that it's, I can't consider myself to be a worker if all I'm doing is writing. She's the head of the cheese department at the New Seasons health food emporium.
Okay.
She had to go to work every day, and I worked at home. And,
sure.
But it wasn't work, and so she said to me things like, "You haven't done an honest day's work in your life."
Jesus.
And so little by little.
You got beat down.
I did less of it.
Yeah.
And I found that I was losing my chops by not doing
Full
time. I used to do it full time. And so now I find I never got my chops fully back. And I write in miniature. I write things that are like, 4 inches of text. And that's that's a job.
Well, it's work.
Yeah, right. I just can't. I don't think in decent sentence form. You know, when I try to make a sentence,
yeah,
it takes me 2 days to come up with a sentence that I'm willing to put my name on. So I would say I don't go more than a week on anything that I try to do. And it could be 3 sentences, you know, it could be 7 sentences, but that's about the max for me.
Okay, so like there's definitely no novels.
I'm writing for that, yeah, no novels.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to...
What about a collection of these 4 inches?
Yeah, I've been writing for Byron Coley. Has this new thing called Bull Tongue Review.
Yeah, I give him
a miniature. I wrote this one. This was like the shortest one yet. I wrote Mankind's dogs are certainly greater than his gods. A little, you know, dyslexia.
Yeah.
And that was a thought I had on my 70th birthday. I wrote that down.
And so that's a sentence.
That's a sentence.
But it's a word.
And that's the full. Yeah. That's the full piece.
Sure.
That's all. You know.
And
I just find it hard to do. Somebody last year wanted me to do a piece to review. There was a Doors biography, but documentary on PBS that I didn't like. He says, well, we'll review it, you know. I'll give you $500. So I tried to do it. I just couldn't come up with, a sequence of sentences that sounded any good.
Yeah. Well, how long did Rimbaud do poems? Like 2 years?
Well, yeah.
Maybe. Now, Elvin.
Yeah.
Elvin, I think, was playing with oxygen.
Is that right?
Yeah, he... Some guys go down swinging, right? So I don't think that's... I think you could have a... Georgie, he's not playing drums that much.
Right. I read there are a couple of books that got put out by some art museum in Philadelphia. The writings, the poems, and aphorisms of Sun Ra.
Whoa. Sonny Blau.
And it's fairly good stuff, you know, where he's saying he just doesn't go for this God system. You know, and it's like God has a lot to answer for. He's not worthy of our respect because death.
Yeah, death.
Says, can you fucking imagine death?
Yeah, I think he had some trippy ailments as a young man.
Right.
So, yeah, I think he's a... there's a satellite spinning documentary on him. But I would like to read his writings.
Right.
Kind of profound guy.
Yeah.
And balls out as far as letting freak flag fly. I mean,
you've seen the movie, what's it called?
This was a kind of documentary. It's almost...
But there's a fiction film that he's in, you know.
Oh.
From, you know...
I didn't know
Spaces
that.
Spaces to Place, whatever. It's got some title like that. Yeah, and it's...
Okay.
It's terrific.
That was magnificent.
It's about, you know, he plays an alien. He comes from some place where...
Maybe I did.
On his planet... Vegetables float, you know, and he comes to the U.S. basically, of all places to land, because he wants to rid the country of pimps.
Of course.
And that's like the plot of the movie. It's just
So, you are, as especially Byron would tell you, man, to hear it. Richard Meltzer lost his chops at writing. It's tough, man.
Well, it feels like, you know, if I had to, face my final days thinking like, geez, I could have written so much more. I feel like I did come up with a body of work that I'm proud of.
Yeah.
And so, at the very least, I don't feel that I wasted the time that I did put in, you know? And sometimes, just for no particular reason, in the middle of the day, I remember something funny that I wrote, and I go find it in a book. You know, I can give myself a giggle. You know, and I wrote. For instance, there was this thing about, I think it was a piece about burgers. You know, that I wrote for the LA Reader. And it got reprinted in my in LA's The Capital of Kansas.
Yeah.
And there's something there where I'm talking about various ways to die. You know, burgers being one of the possible ways to die. You know, and I say, like, you know, you could ingest red paint. You know, you could stick spokes, you know, for vital organs. You know, or you could have burgers.
Burgers.
You know, which would you? What do you prefer?
So do you have plans to leave Portland?
I'm too old to think about another place, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like I feel still connected to the not the imaginary Portland that, you know, how it looked 20 years ago, but I like the people. You know, it's a civil place.
Yeah.
And I have you know, enough friends who are themselves never going to leave this place, and so I'll call it home.
Good company.
But you were talking, one of my friends is this guy, Jimmy McDonough, who just came out with, he wrote the Neil Young bio a few years ago, and he just wrote the autobiography of Fogerty as told to Jimmy McDonough.
My organ man, Pete.
Yeah?
He read it. He liked it a lot.
And he said he
trippy
had,
guy.
So Jimmy said he had a really fight with Fogerty. You know, like
trippy guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's big in my life because of D Boone. When I met D Boone, that's the only rock man he knew.
Right.
And I remember his ma put me on bass. I didn't know what a bass was. Arena rock.
Right.
I saw T-Rex.
Bass.
Yeah, bass. I didn't. And I'm hearing the records. I mean, the records. They're laying on the hardwood floor, no covers. Grape juice on them. We got to put 6/4 on the needle to keep it from skipping. I can't hear what the bass guy's doing. So I thought, well, if I wear the singer shirts, maybe D Moon will still like me. And that's how I got into flow.
All right.
No lumberjack and farmers. Right. Or real
Pendleton shirts.
Get this. The boss of Pendleton, you know, you have a town back east of the state. He's wrote me a letter. Why? You've done great, whatever. Shill work for us. So I'm going to send you 3 of my favorite Pendletons.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were like taupe and puce.
Taupe.
I never wore
taupe.
No, these color, these word, color words. Puce, bone, mauve.
This guy watches this.
Remember the crayons? That's where they had the names.
There's this Kenneth Anger, you know, this filmmaker. He does like satanic movies and all that, and he's the guy. He's the first guy to use rock songs before Scorsese did Main Streets. He was doing movies with custom car commandos, people waxing their cars with this music playing and all that. Anyway, he did one of his movies is called Puce Moment.
Anyway, I never wore any of these
flags.
It was a peace moment for me.
Right.
I couldn't wear these things.
Yeah.
I mean, and a Pendleton for me is like the gray. I mean, they're great. You got to watch out, though. Don't dry them because they have about this thing.
Right.
They shrink them. And speaking of D Boone, this would really get on him. You know, they're kind of scratchy wool.
Yeah.
And I would wear them with no undershirt.
Yeah, they're cotton too.
Yeah, well, the ones I wore were these wool ones that, like hair shirts, okay? And D Boone couldn't stand to see me wearing them, even though he's not, doesn't have it on.
Yeah.
Just the idea of me.
Just to think that.
He would like it so upset about. That's one of the only things he really got upset about with me, was wearing a Pendleton without a shirt under it.
Right.
So scratchy. The other thing, he hated bugs. Told me when he was 5, somebody had a mayonnaise jar full of spiders. And he opened it up, put his hand in it, and they crawled up his arm. So freaked him out.
Right.
Freaked him out. We lived next door. I first moved out, we were 18.
So who filled up the jar?
I don't know, I was there. I was 5 years old. Yeah, I know. It wasn't him. It was some. He said he found it and opened it up. And when we first moved out, we got apartments that were next to each other, little bungalows. And we were working at Jack. French cooking, Jacques in the box, you know, $1.65 an hour, and 11 to 7 graveyard. And every time we'd come home in the morning, there'd be a fucking big ass grasshopper in the corner of his path.
Uh-huh.
I said, we kill it, you know. Why we kill it? You know, how's it come back? And I see his overhead there, this ceiling.
Yeah.
And there's a panel. And I go, look, take that lamp off this little table. Let me climb up and have a look in there. So I can lift it up, and you know, it's all dark and everything. I said, Tibuna, take the shade off that lamp and pass it up to me. And I bring, you know, I'm up to my shoulders up in the attic, right?
Yeah.
There's like 50 million motherfuckers on the red eye. I scream and drop the lamp, bulb breaks. Tibuna right away gets the hammer, nail that thing, moves the next thing. Yeah, he had a phobia about bugs. This big, strong guy.
Yeah.
Bugs just creeped him out.
Yeah.
Trippy. I think of him all the time.
William Burroughs, centipedes spooked him. He couldn't stand the idea of centipedes.
I hear in Japan, they crawl on your pad and they bite you.
Bite you. Okay.
And, yeah, that's what some of my friends over there said. Watch out. They come in there and bite you. Kind of scary. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you.
It means a lot to me.
It means a lot to me, and I feel very much like I wish I could. I don't think I can manage the show tonight.
Don't worry.
But
I'll come back, you know.
Yeah.
Portland's a regular.
I'll still be here, you know.
What do you call that? Stop on the circuit.
Right.
You know how I do it? Fall time, I go clockwise.
Uh-huh.
Springtime, I go counterclockwise.
Oh, okay.
Because you want to get out of the north before it gets too cold. You want the south
do you have a,
to
like,
cool down.
Do you have like a large size map in your place with a
the Booker man does. Yeah. Steve Cole.
Right.
No, I kind of got it branded on my brain.
I once bought a map, a wall map, when I was starting to listen to the blues about 15 years ago. I wanted to, you know, Mississippi, I wanted to see the Delta. You know, where is St. Louis in relation to Memphis? I got a
Clarksville.
Map.
You know, I played there with Taft Alco.
Okay, Clarksville.
Highway 61, you know,
right.
The crossroads.
Right. Yeah.
I got some like kind of Disneyland kitsch thing there. But yeah, that Yazoo River, the Yellow Dog. Wow, so you did it with the map. Well, in springtime, you want to get out south before it gets too hot. You want to wait for the north. This is stuff from vaudeville. But so, as I... actually, I've come to embrace vaudeville.
Okay.
I feel I'm more part of that tradition.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, Little Richard and rock and roll. Okay. But I do feel part of vaudeville.
Do you ever feel like a comedian?
Yeah, I'm a juggler or whatever it takes.
Yeah, yeah.
The guys, right, they're on the farm. Or whatever, they don't have to, there's no television, there's no radio, they have to have guys come work the towns.
Right.
I think that's, maybe the head of the cheese department don't think it's honest work, but I'm into it. You know, and that's...
Oh, she would think what you do is honest work.
Would she?
But writing is just like...
writing is incredible.
She just think it's a trifle.
Well, where does she think I get inspired to write all the songs? Is it other musicians? No, it's writers. Writers, biggest influence on me, incredible. Yeah. You know, we can put together a sentence I've been reading is this Cormac McCarthy.
Right. He's a guy who read Faulkner. You know, he ate it for breakfast. Yeah.
In Light of August, Joe Christmas.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Coming up.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I read that baby in 2 days. I couldn't let it go.
Right.
Now, and that didn't take work. Maybe it just flowed out his hand. Dictated it to somebody.
One of the things I like.
Did he hate editors?
I'm sure he didn't get along with them.
Yeah, and he tried Hollywood, right? Big Sleep.
He made a lot of money from Hollywood, which took away from the time on the real books.
Right, right.
He actually wrote a screen. Howard Hughes paid him good money to write a screenplay for a movie that never got shot, The Churchill Story. It was supposed to be a 3-hour movie. And he actually wrote this
like
thing.
Like Winston Churchill?
Yes. And it was like during the war, be a patriotic, you know. And it was, and one of the characters was De Gaulle, you know. So he actually had to have dialogue, De Gaulle speaking to subordinates or whatever. Maybe 10 years ago, I found some literary critic said, I have to find this script, and it's in some archive in Hollywood, and he read it, and he's like, ugh. You know, poor Faulkner, you know, he probably would have had two novels in him that, you know, this thing, obliterated.
Well, yeah. Mickey Mantle ended up batting 100 or something.
Right.
The salad days. So maybe knowing when to quit is a good thing.
Yeah.
I think Rimbo has got to be the prime example. I mean, that guy, right? He's still a kid, and he says, that's it.
Right.
That's it.
That's well, it. Yeah. Monk once said that he doesn't think that if you want to, you know, who are the great musicians at any time? He says, they don't have to be mature at all. You have to see them in their infancy, and you already know they either got it or they don't. Yeah.
Okay, thanks so much, Richard.
Thank you.
December 20th, 2015 is the second hour of the Watt from Beat Row Show. for Pedro Show. Start second hour off with Soul Brother from the Criminal Guitars. And guest now, Jacob Decker, Portland, Oregon. What's your earliest musical memory?
It was probably a tape that my grandma got me. It was Fats Domino.
Okay, in the house.
And then second was like probably Duke Ellington.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. About how old?
Like five.
Five, okay.
Five,
before five school.
Yeah.
And can you remember the first record you bought?
We had, when I was growing up, it was like, there's records around the house, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know, I guess my first tape was like something by Led Zeppelin or
cassette
that I bought.
That you bought.
Yeah.
Yeah, cassettes. You know, in the old days of touring, that's all we did in the boat and in the van, is cassette players. So I have thousands of cassettes. Even the racks. But I haven't played for cassettes. You know,
yeah.
Forever. So Led Zeppelin. What about making your own music? What got you started? What was the first thing you played? Was it guitar?
The thing I was good at first was probably piano.
You started with piano?
Yeah.
How'd that
happen? Well,
Ma wanted you to do lessons?
My grandma.
Grandma? Okay. Yeah.
So I learned.
How old?
I was seven.
Seven. And, now I've had people on the show talk about having to do piano young.
Yeah.
And it was nightmare experiences.
Oh,
like
yeah.
The teachers were all belliged, beating up.
Yeah.
With the.
I didn't get any of that. I didn't
for not practicing. And so I say that because I turned them off. I never wanted to play ever again. It was such a bad experience.
Yeah.
A few people like that. This wasn't like that for you.
No, my teacher wasn't like that.
Okay.
She was a nice old church lady, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Was it tough?
No,
because you said the first thing you heard was Fats Domino.
Yeah.
There's some piano there.
Yeah, there was the stuff that I was like, I wanted to do that, and I wanted to play like Bumble Boogie, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But she wanted to teach you what? Classical?
Just like church songs.
Church songs, yeah, right. Like, okay.
And classical. I wish I'd have like stuck with classical though, you know? Like,
okay.
Learn more about it.
The left hand, right hand, was that tough?
Yeah, of course.
I like the left hand. I'm a little partial left hand.
Of course. Of course you are.
A little bass.
Yeah.
Does your brain... You have to not think about it, right?
Yeah.
You just do it.
Exactly.
I think maybe I have some kind of comparison when I'm trying to do the bass and the spiel. You can't think about either one. They just have to come both. But it's always intrigued me about piano and keyboard. With this.
Yeah. You gotta like shut it off.
So you guys had a piano and a pad. Of course.
Yeah.
I was bit, you know, me and D Boom. Well, we're talking electric, you know, to be in a band. They were so expensive in those days, and we're talking early 70s. We didn't know anybody who played them. And if you do have a piano, acoustic one, how do you get it to gigs? And so we never got to play with one. That's why when I met second man, organ man, Pizzo, because what got me really into it, there's a song by Velvet Underground called Sister Ray. And all these years, I finally, and he was in an Italian Slav wedding band. And I got turned on to him, and I was like, wow, I get to play him. Goes down to sea, actually, lower than me. So I put that band together for my second album. So I'm intrigued by that. You remember the first songs you were playing? These, like, yeah, hymns and stuff, right?
Yeah, like in, like, Chariots of Fire and stuff, and, like, Music Box Dancer. And like
okay.
Stuff.
But you didn't, like bring her song? Can you teach me this song?
Well, I wanted to, like, I wanted to play, like, Boogie, you know?
Yeah, right,
like,
right.
That's what I was, like, I felt that stuff. And
yeah.
I just grew up in a small town, you know, and there's just,
what town's this?
Prineville, Oregon.
Prineville?
Yeah.
Where's
Les Schwab. It's, It's like dead center of the state, Central Oregon.
Okay. Wow. I don't even think I've been there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you aren't missing too much, really.
Okay, so it's okay. Everybody's got to come somewhere. I told you, Portsmouth, Virginia. Next to the biggest Navy base in the world, so.
Yeah.
Maybe I'd like the center. Like, so, did you ever start writing your own tunes on the piano?
Yeah, man. I don't remember anything.
You don't remember anything, but you did start writing.
Yeah. Just like something.
You know, me and D Boone never wrote songs to a punk movement. Where we came from, everybody copied records.
Yeah.
Never wrote a song till we saw these guys almost learning in public. It was like, fuck. I remember the first gig we saw was Bags, and I told D-Boom we can do this. Guys are just, why don't we try? So you wrote songs, but you can't remember. So how long were you playing this band?
In Criminal Guitars?
Playing piano as a kid.
Oh, I did that for about like 5 years or so.
5 years?
Yeah.
And just at the house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then, when did you make the move to guitar?
Probably about like 14 or 15.
And that, what drove you?
Well, my uncle played and
okay.
And there's
so you have music in your family.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not a lot, but it's enough.
But he had a guitar, your uncle.
Yeah.
Okay. And so.
I just asked him if I could play it, you know. I was like,
yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Did you play his?
Yeah, I was just like, I was just like, always see it sitting out there, and he'd be home, and he'd be at work, and I just like, I want to give it a whirl.
And you taught yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah, bitch.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, people out there, I met Jacob with Tad Falco. We got to share the stage at Dante's here in Portland, and. Incredible guitars, and good technique and stuff, but also the spirit, man. What to me music really is, it's not just techniques and things like this. It's just incredible. And you're self-taught. Do you remember the first song you learned on the guitar, or did you start writing on the guitar right away?
I think that I was like the first song I learned all the way through. I don't know, man. Like,
you weren't playing with other dudes. You were just playing myself.
Yeah.
Nobody at school.
No, that wasn't until like I was like
high school or something,
17 or 18.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'd see like other kids playing. I was like, I'm gonna do that. Like all those other kids were like learning Nirvana songs, and I was like learning like Led Zeppelin and like. Butt rock songs, you know.
From 20, 30 years before.
Yeah.
Okay. Why do you think?
Because
you want to be different.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Not everybody's got to play the Nirvana songs, right?
No, man.
So you learned off some records then, too. Like
of course. Boone.
Okay. No, like Greg Ginn, he told me he never copied songs off record. I met dudes that never learned off records. They just started writing right away.
Weird.
I'm telling you, everybody's got their own mission.
Yeah.
Their own or journey.
Totally. Cat.
And, at first I thought everybody learned off records too.
Yeah.
Copied things and stuff. When you start playing with people. Well, let me go this. Led Zeppelin. So Jimmy Page is like big influence?
Well, yeah.
In those days.
Yeah.
Some other guys? How'd your uncle play? What kind of style did he play?
Like that sort of style.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
So like arena rock.
Yeah.
The 70s.
Yeah.
Late 60s.
I wasn't like totally into that at first, but then I was just like, I wanted to learn how to play like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not there yet. Still working at it.
But was there other guitars?
Yeah, Jimi Hendrix and like
Jimi Hendrix,
Joe Mathis and Merle Travis.
Merle Travis,
Jim Heath,
yeah, good cats.
Yeah, man.
Wow,
it's like all over the place.
And when at school you met other music guys in high school and like let's do a band. Can you remember?
Yeah,
can you remember your first time jamming with other dudes?
Yeah,
What was it like?
It was just like...
Was it a garage?
Yeah. It's just like, I can't believe it like feels like this, you know? And we were probably like playing like total garbage.
Yeah. But it was a drummer? A bass?
Drummer, bass, guitarist.
It was a trio?
Yeah.
Wow. And, you know, when we started, when I met D-Boone, all he knew was Creedence, you know, so...
That's not bad.
We would jam, like, on the one riff for a long time. Is that what you did? Okay. Did this band have a name? It was just a jam, okay.
Yeah.
When, can you remember when you first put together a band? Or was part of a band?
I think it... I was just, like... fresh out of high school, I think.
Okay.
I did that. I don't remember the name. I moved up here to play music.
Actually. Oh, okay. Because there was a lot going on.
Yeah. There was like.
But still, that garage was there. So yeah,
that's right.
Somewhere. So you came to Portland.
Yeah.
And of course, music scene.
Yeah.
A lot of people playing here.
Yeah.
You know, when I first played here, there was one club.
Satyricon.
And now there's like 40.
Yeah,
not that many, but there's a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot. So you come here, there's a lot of cats to play. So what happened? Drinking the paper or just hanging out with people? Or?
Yeah. You know, like, I wanted to work on country stuff and, like, punk rock stuff.
Yeah.
But, so I did, like, cover bands for Halloween, like the Misfits and Radio Birdman, and the Saints and stuff.
You know where Radio Birdman got the name, right?
Yeah, Stooges.
1970. It's Radio Burning.
Yeah, they thought it said. It's still awesome, though. It's great that they got it.
You know, they got back together, and this festival I was playing with. Maybe it was Porter for Powers or Stooges, and anyway, they had to give the drummer, they had to teach the drummer Latin. That's what they told us. They had to teach him drums again.
Jeez.
It had been so long between them playing. So, like, for Halloween, you guys did a bunch of songs. So that's your first gig?
Yeah, like, probably cover bands. And then I was in a honky-tonk band for a minute. And then I'm...
Now, how'd you do this? Just meeting people.
Yeah.
We had a thing in the SoCal called the Recycler, and there'd be ads, and they were hilarious, you know, no flakes, must have own equipment.
Yeah.
Image a must.
I tried that.
Did you? Did they have that up here too?
Yeah, okay. It was like Mercury and like Craigslist, but you just like, that was to no avail.
I did one, because when we saw the bags, that first gig I saw, who didn't want to make a band, punk band at first. So I answered one of those ads, San Marco Boulevard. This is drummer's daddy's electric shop. And I jammed "I Want to Be Your Dog" for like 3 hours with this drummer, guitar, and singer. And, you know, the one riff, we're home. Like 3 hours. Hey, that was great and everything. And I was all happy, and I go back. And Peter was like, 30 miles south. And I tell D-Boone, and D-Boone says, okay, I'll make a band with you. So I never jam with them again. And I never, it doesn't add again. I didn't plan it that way. I didn't force them into it, but.
You just lit the fire.
I guess I did. But that band, he didn't really like. He wouldn't give any songs. He always had in his mind Minutemen. I think back about it. So, did you ever have ideas about making your own band?
I was in a cover band for a minute that just like did soul songs and stuff. And
yeah.
I was playing bass in that.
Oh, you did bass too? Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you think about bass?
That's the foundation, baby.
Yeah, but compared with guitar, like, much different?
It taught me how to like slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
Just like take it easy.
You know the sounds. I know it's got strings like guitar, but it's kind of like drums. The sounds. I think the closest thing is the kick drum.
Yeah.
And toms.
Yeah. And, yeah, they're like D&Gers.
So you play bass and doing song, and that's the perfect music too, because the bass is really, a lot of those songs I think start on them. It seems a lot of styles of music, the bass is the last thing added. Mm-hmm. Not soul and R&B. Seems like that stuff's
right up in front.
Yeah, and then they add the other stuff.
Yeah,
and the guitar players too are really smart in that music. For as far as letting the bass get in there.
Steve Cropper, another hero.
Yeah, really. They leave room, space, play trebly. You know, one thing I had with the Led Zeppelin kind of music, man, it was hard. You know, John Entwistle could do it, or Jack Bruce, but it was hard to get through.
Yeah.
And actually, politically, people thought the guitars dominated too much. That's why the Minutemen had their sound. It was like, actually, the music was more political than the words.
Yeah, you want the bass and drums come up and the guitar. Sort of like with an R&B.
All treble-y, yeah.
Yeah, I got into that. So you were in this band and you were thinking of making your own band?
Yeah. I just wanted to like play music that people could just go dance to, you know?
Dance. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's completely different from the arena rock. Everybody sitting down.
Yeah. Riffs. Yeah, I don't wanna play arena rock. I don't know if I ever do.
No, that's just a thing in your life.
Yeah.
A stage.
I just like seeing people have a good time, you know?
Yeah.
They ain't worried about their bills or all that other shit.
Yeah, right. Work the room.
Yeah.
And work can get people, in a kind of way like church, man. Everybody comes together when they're singing and with their bodies and dancing and the vibrations off the stage. And so what came to that?
It dissolved,
okay. And then, so the story of the Criminal Guitars.
Yeah, I was, you know, I wasn't doing anything for a long time, and my...
No music?
Yeah, I mean, I was just, like, sitting in my room and just plinking away.
You were still playing, though?
Yeah, of course, just work on it.
Yeah.
And my buddy was like, hey, I'm doing this thing with my other friends, and we need a guitarist.
Okay.
So can do it. And I was like kind of unsure at first, but nah, I like it and I just love playing with those kids, you know?
Okay. And so they already had it going.
Yeah.
And then you come and join.
Right.
And you guys got a great sound, man.
Thanks.
I mean, it's just a happening band. Do you remember your first gig with them?
Yeah. And that was at the East End before there was a fire there.
The East End?
Yeah, it was over on MLK.
Oh, yeah. We drove that on that to get here a little bit.
Yeah.
And what was it like?
The first shows were like, I was unsure at first, you know.
Because you're doing original music.
Yeah.
It's different than the copy bands, right?
What are we looking for? Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then,
actually, everybody's pretty distinct in the band.
Yeah.
This is cool.
Yeah. And,
not like wearing all the same clothes, man.
Yeah.
But even the styles, everything. It's a trippy collection of things.
Yeah.
Personalities and expressions. I like it. So,
being in that band is like trying to herd cats a lot of times. Yeah, but it's like, that's when we play live, it feels good.
So. Yeah, yeah.
You
guys, of course, you just played some recording. What was that like? Was that your first time in the studio?
No, I played bass for evangelical Christian ska band.
And they recorded,
and I did some bass.
Evangelical ska band.
Yeah, I did like a fucking... Now bass tracks on
that. Yeah, but bass on ska is pretty moving usually.
Yeah.
Is it like going along? When I think of some of them bands, the bass line is pretty pumping.
Yeah.
Kind of foundation.
I just got bored, you know.
Yeah. What was it like in the studio?
You
know about this thing called red light? When you know you're being recorded, all the clamps?
Oh, yeah.
I still get that shit.
I like to get in there and get out. I'm just like, I get so nervous. And
yeah.
I'm like,
one thing about this new thing, you could do it at home, try it again and again and again. In the old days, you'd rent studio time, expensive. Oh, clams, clams. I get so nervous. The red light is, you know, recording. That's what I meant by that. And like, you know, it's being captured. If you're just messing around, you don't think you'll be recorded. You kind of play better.
I used to like put in a tape and like hit record on a stereo that could record through the speaker or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I would play that through the stereo and I'd crank that up and then I'd play like another guitar or mandolin over the top of that. And
oh, you play mandolin too? People play mandolin.
Just barely.
Yeah, and fifths.
Yeah.
Too, like a violin.
Yep.
So the more drama when you go between the strings. And he showed me some chords.
Cool.
And stuff. In fact, I made a mistake to tell Jim O'Rourke that. And I got to put mandolin. We made this duet album together and I got to put mandolin on it. Yeah, I got to do that. This spring, I got to finish 4 records. Some of them, they've been like 5 years. But back to you. After the Evangelical Ska Band recording.
I was just like. Cause
your next recording, was it
the Criminal Guitars? Yeah.
Okay, so what was that like?
It was better a lot.
Yeah, okay.
It was
good. Okay. Yeah.
I was just like filling in, but they wanted.
Right, they already had stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you like 2,000 takes or one take? What do you like?
I like to do it like within 1 or 2.
Yeah, yeah.
Feel I don't like to fuck around, you know, just play it simple.
Yeah, the feel.
Yeah.
Songwriting. Did you get into that?
Well,
when you were sitting in your room just playing guitar?
Yeah, I've got a few things that I'm working on. You know, I got.
Yeah. Because some dudes, for example, my second man, they don't write songs.
Yeah.
But they play like motherfuckers. Probably most people, symphonies don't compose.
Exactly.
I think people just think, just because you play, you compose too. I don't think. Some dudes who compose don't really play that much. I think you can, to be both, is kind of special.
Yeah, one of my friends writes all the parts for his whole band, like,
really?
And everything.
Well, Jay Maskus.
Yeah.
Did that for a long time. Now you're more loose back in. But yeah, some guys. Oh, that kid in England, the Goatee, he records them all himself. Then the band's just so you can do gigs.
That's wild.
Yeah. So there's a lot of ways to do it. So that's why I'm kind of curious. What's your process with songwriting?
Well, it depends on like what I got in my hands. Like, I usually just like,
well, for example, I always start with title.
Really?
Yeah, so I can focus on something. It seems I'm too scatterbrained. I need to like have it together.
Yeah, like a foundation.
And everybody I've told that to says, "Wow, it's weird." And nobody, they say titles always last.
Yeah.
Maybe it came from the Minutemen because when Georgie or D Boone gave me words, they never gave me titles. So I was always in charge of the titles, but it seemed for me, for writing, I had to have a title. So, well, my idea is the words and the music, they got to kind of come together somehow.
Right.
So that's the.
I would start with the music, like.
Okay.
You know, like pianos are good to have around because you got like your bass.
Oh, you compose them. So, well, you have a keyboard then?
Yeah.
Okay, okay. Oh, so you didn't let it go.
No, man.
Yeah, good.
You don't want to waste your time for nothing.
No,
I guess.
No. And compose. I think probably, especially in the old days, a lot of compositions done on piano. Because you're right, you get the bass and the treble.
It's like the chords are like horn parts and stuff.
Sure. And what about composing on the bass?
Because
that's what I do.
Yeah,
I've done some guitar, like that third opera I did all of D. Boone's guitar, and then I wrote a few, but maybe 5% on bass. The way I see it is, bass kind of like glue. If you ain't got something to stick to, you're just a puddle. So I don't really look at the song all the way realized. The guys are playing with me, they're going to bring stuff to it. So, you know, launch pad or springboard. That's the way I see things. And I got a bass, a band with two basses. Actually, it's my longest running band we've had in 30 years now. It's called Dose. And that's a trip. He's writing. You know,
do you write his parts too?
No, no. And that's the lady from Black Flag. No. If you knew her. You know what? I've helped with some little parts, but she set him up. And even the. Well, I've been lucky to play with people like Nels Klein and stuff, you know. They weigh into that. Yeah, because some people, they don't think it's enough. You know,
yeah.
It's like you're writing the song on the kick drum or on the cymbals, you know. You're not giving me enough. But people like Nels Klein, they love it.
Yeah.
Because it's not restrictive. I mean, we got some harmonic stuff. We got some notes and stuff. Definitely have rhythm and starts and stops. But it's... A lot of it's up in the air from the guy, the cat's playing with you. And I like to do that with the composition. And sometimes they're all about possibility. I just want to see what comes out.
Yeah.
And so it has nothing to do with playing for people, working a room. Well, it does have something because you have to have material to work that room or just do covers. So your process is you're on your piano. Come up things, a music,
or I'll like finger pick something.
Or finger pick,
and I could like write a soul song on bass too.
Okay, so you start with bass lick sometimes too.
Yeah,
and then you bring in the singing
or
melody line.
Yeah, yeah, and I was like straight eight.
Yeah, okay, and then comes the time.
Yeah,
yeah. And what do you make demos?
I don't.
You know,
I should.
In the old days, I didn't either. Me and D-Boone didn't either. Well, one thing, we didn't have to teach each other because we grew up playing together. So,
right.
Most of the time I spent working Georgie in on the drums. Yeah, because he'd just play it and I'd hear something, play right to it. Saying, you do it to me too. Do it to me. Give for me.
Yeah.
And I never had that again until Nels Klein. In fact, a lot of the recordings I've done with Nels... I had the song all together, but I bring him in the studio. He's never really heard it before. And because he has years of improvisation, he just plays right to it.
Yeah.
And because I'm into the possibility, the mystery. Wow, what can this become?
Totally.
Like giving birth, how are they going to grow up these things into? Going to be, you know, I don't know.
Sometimes.
Einsteins, or are they going to be like criminals or whatever? But it's going to come out of this stuff.
Do you ever change a song over time too, just like make it a little
different.
All the time.
Last night, you know, some of that stuff was 35 years old and actually very hard to play. You know, I don't really play that way anymore, but I just thought it was a good idea to try it. There were tunes that I always thought of Minutemen songs as Minutemen, but actually there was three different writers, so I thought play the ones where Watt wrote everything. Not all the trump fills and the lead guitar and all that, but you know, the words and the music.
Right.
And they were weird. I mean, those guys wrote the better songs. And, you know, much better songs, but they were strange. And so I thought it would be kind of neat to do that and play that. But some of them I did have to change because I just can't play that way anymore. I changed a little bit.
Yeah.
And
it's knowing when not to play sometimes it'll make something so cool.
Yeah, and dynamic. Yeah. Yeah, leaving stuff out.
Yeah.
That's part of my process too. I usually start up, like, if I'm developing a riff or chord changes too much, and I have to pull out. Which might be better than having to add and add. Maybe it's better to pull out.
Yeah. Because you can add it later too. Just keep it.
Who are some songwriters that inspire you?
Well, George Harrison.
Good songwriter.
Yeah, I like George Harrison.
I think that I was reading. No, it was a movie. Martin Scorsese. It's on an airplane. I usually watch those. That's the reason the band broke. They would only give him one song a record.
Yeah, he's a great songwriter, man.
Well, he had a whole bunch because of that. So when he had like a double album or triple album, Any others?
Duke Ellington.
Duke Ellington.
I like him. He's a great songwriter.
Yeah.
Him and Billy Strayhorn.
Billy Strayhorn.
Yeah.
Nature Boy.
Yeah, man. And Charles Mingus, too. Like.
Great composer. How people realize that. And he didn't do any on the bass. It was all on the piano.
Yeah.
Mingus Fingers, I think, was his first song. Have you ever read, there's a book called Beneath the Underdog.
I have read that, the autobiography. Yeah, it's amazing.
Kind of, there's and must it's be like, some fantasy.
Yeah, and also it's like, in the early chapters too, just like his childhood growing up.
Oh yeah.
It's just like devastating, and like, no wonder he's crazy.
Yeah, I know. But he's written so well too, like music. It's written like music. That book is intense. People, listen to it if you can. In Portland now, what's the scene like? You know, I come, right, when I'm on tour and stuff, and it's hard to really know what's going on in a town when you're there one day and shit.
Yeah,
what's it like right now?
I think there's a lot of stuff going on right now. Like, for a few years there, it felt like pretty stagnant, but there's a little, I feel like...
You mean like no new sounds, no new bands?
Yeah, or maybe it was just that I was stagnant and just didn't feel like...
But the scene, I think, is really healthy now.
Yeah, I think it's doing better. Yeah, it's
getting
better.
Okay, a lot of good bands play with.
And like some of the bands are just...
I mean, people talk about this. I think a scene is important. I mean, everybody's got to do stuff on their own, too. But it's happening to have a scene.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's how you get to express yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's doing okay right now.
So some bands you like here?
Danova, Hong Kong Banana.
Hong Kong Banana.
Yeah, the Reverberations.
Reverberations.
Long Knife.
These are guys I don't know. This is why I'm curious.
Yeah, they're all doing really good right now. It's good to watch them too, you know.
What's the hardest thing about being a musician in Portland?
It's the same everywhere, I guess. Just like being broke, you know?
Being broke, yeah. Yeah. But some people like practice pads are hard to find. I've been so lucky. I've had the same practice pad 29 years. Nice. It's the officer's latrine of this old fort. I took out all the shitters and put up a bulkhead and a hatch.
Rad.
Yeah, because Moody Boom, we didn't have... apartments, you know, so especially with drummers, practice pads were hard.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Everything's expensive here. You have to share it with a bunch of other bands.
That's what you do.
Yeah.
Is it one of the pads that have a lot of prac rooms?
Yeah.
There's one of those in Pedro, and it's almost impossible. But they're all going on at the same time.
Yeah. It's true.
I'm so lucky that way. The only thing we hear is us.
That's good.
so lucky. So I'm curious about things like that. There is a lot of venues, a lot of places to play here. I know that.
Yeah.
And so
there's been so many that's like kind of
come and go,
shut down too. Like in the last few years that have been going for a while. You know?
Okay.
Like Satyricon shut down.
I know.
And Slab Town. It's crazy to watch. It's just all happening so fast.
And what about labels?
What do you like? Labels?
What record labels? Important. Not really.
Well, there are. Record labels. Jackpot Records.
Jackpot.
Forgot.
Record stores.
Jackpot, Second Avenue, Mississippi Records.
Yeah.
Crossroads is good.
Mississippi Crossroads. I was with Tafalco in Clarksville. That's where the cross, maybe there's some corny ass sign up there or sculpture. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I knew that song from Cream way before I knew Robert Johnson, you know.
Of course.
It's called Wheels of Fire, right?
Yeah.
And one album's studio, one's live. And they've mixed it with Jack Bruce. Jack Bruce, huge influence on me.
Yeah.
A lot of guys were, though. James Jamerson, Larry Graham.
Larry Graham invented the slap, right? Because he didn't have a bass player.
Yeah, but you think about the rockabilly guys are kind of...
Yeah.
You know, music... We're talking about John Coltrane and this interview Frank Kosky said, oh, Sun Ra says you're ripping him off, you know. He goes, well, you know, I do listen to John Gilmore.
Yeah.
It's sort of like music's a reservoir, everybody.
Yeah.
So things blend and people influence on each other.
Yeah, you're like a melting pot, you know.
Right, right.
Take all the influences.
So it's mixed like Jack on one side and Mr. Clapton. And he rolled in there. It was just incredible. I mean, based on the hierarchy, he's sort of like the retarded friend. And actually, after the movement, the punk movement came in, it really opened things out for the bass players. I really think, really did.
Who was the bass player for the Rosillos?
Oh, I remember them.
Yeah, he was...
It was a husband and wife and front people, front singers.
Right.
I can't remember them. Guys in the band, I can't remember their names, but what about,
yeah,
he's good,
amazing, like,
he's good, yeah. I think they got back together and are doing gigs,
yeah, we just, I just saw them in,
and they're
Seattle.
From the 70s,
yeah, yeah,
and so, yeah, it profound on me, Wheels of Fire, you know, he died last year, I was in Mobile, and it hit me hard. I don't know why. I mean, he lived rough. He's lucky to make it probably to where he did. But I just felt I owed him so much.
Yeah.
And man, we get done. The gig was really strange. And we get done playing. And have you ever done this thing where you go to the YouTube and just start watching videos of Cream and shit, Jack?
Of course.
Yeah. Bourbon. It was hard. It was really hard. It hit me hard. Then Andy Frazier was in Free. Trevor Boulder from the Spiders of Mars. Boeing. You know, I think as you go on, the odds of losing more people. But these guys are hugely, hugely influential on me. It's a trip. I feel like I owe them, like I should be cutting their lawn or something. Washing the windows.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, like, because what you get from them is like,
I know,
you
I
feel
know.
Like you're never going like, to be able to repay
well, them. Well, of course, the D Boom number one, I mean, yeah. As far as music for me. But all these other guys I never even met, you know.
Yeah.
Music is an interesting thing. I brought up something that I want to ask you about, touring.
Yeah.
Have you done touring?
Once.
And what was that like?
It was like booked for 10 days and we only played, like we were booked for 10 shows and only played 5.
Half of them?
Yeah. So
like the West Coast?
Yeah. It was frustrating. It was frustrating.
You want to do more?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
But I just want to do it with a band I like, you know?
Okay.
Like with people I like and trust. That's what I want to do it with.
But then, so this was in Criminal Guitars?
No. It was, yeah.
Cause
it was silly business.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing it a little while. So.
Yeah.
I think the last, if you call a tour more than a month, 69, I think to have. That's my 69th. I've been doing a little more. Only 69 more. And it's an interesting way of, actually, that's the living. That's how I make a living. Is playing the clubs. And that's why I'm interested in the different scenes and stuff. Because they're so short, you know?
Yeah.
And they're just so little.
There's so much to learn about, like, you know, you get all these influences. You can probably pretty much do anything you want. You just got to work on that.
Yeah, you got to work on that. And I think you have to have a kind of dynamic. I mean, there's hills and valleys. You're going to take blows.
Always.
So not be self-important, I think, but somehow have a belief.
Yeah, man. I didn't ever do it, like, play music because I wanted money or anything like that.
For love, right?
I just do it because...
Expression.
Yeah.
You want to get stuff out.
Yeah.
You want to make people dance. To me, those are great, great motivations.
Yeah.
But you don't really have a touring experience. Wow, that's a trip. I mean, some, because a lot of these people, well, there's people I know that have never toured. They only play local. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Be Portland treasure.
Well, I want a tour.
Yeah. I mean, there's something about it that's not even musical, because you are going to see the rest of the country. Other people call these vacations.
Yeah.
You'll see in places. It's a really neat kind of side benefit about it. What about stuff? You know, if it was a magazine, you know they'd be talking about the stuff. Equipment. No. You were playing Gretsch, right?
Yeah.
When you worked on it, you changed it a little bit, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, I just had the bridge pegged on it and stuff. And
what about, like, the pickups?
Those are
both original?
Those are original.
Okay.
Stock. I thought about, like, just putting, like, a more of a lower watt, like, TD Jones pickup in it, but it sounds fine the way it
sounds
is.
Sounds great. Sounds great. What about amp-wise?
It's got a concert reverb, right? Yeah. It's good, 410s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know, like, concerts were Bob Mould. He also liked them JC whatever chorus things.
Mm-hmm.
And he played with both of them, I remember. Concerts are good.
Yeah.
But here.
Is the amp? I think it's like a early 90s or something.
It's a reissue one.
Yeah. It's all right.
What about pedal rock? I tried it for my second opera. It's too hard for what?
Yeah. You know, like, I just use, like, the distortion and the amp and the tremolo and the reverb, and I have a delay. And it's just like this old, like...
You have a delay?
Yeah.
And do you have a fuzz box?
No. Just amp.
From the amp, yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like...
So what about popping for solo?
I just...
Play louder.
A boost, yeah.
You have a boost box?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna get rid of it, though. I just don't
know. Yeah. For me, I couldn't get the coordination. Also, bass loses a lot of punch. I don't even like bass with two pickups. I like one pickup, more punch. Bass is a lot about punch.
Yeah.
You guitar guys, you're more about texture. Very interesting, though. I mean, both worlds just have different things. With Criminal Guitars, do you bring material to them?
I think that... No, the singer does most of the writing.
Right, so when you come in...
Like, I want to do, like, this country. I want to just, like, finger-picking stuff.
And yeah, arpeggiated.
Yeah, just, like...
Do you know what's in that?
I need to
with
work
on... pick some, or fingers?
Nashville claw.
Oh, the claw, both. That's bad. I love that shit, because...
You don't have to sit it down, either.
No. And there's a trippy... It's a trippy thing, though, man.
It's Yeah, I'm not.
It's a blend of all this.
I'm not great at it yet.
But you're working on it.
Yeah, always.
What about tunings? You ever do that open stuff?
Yeah.
Well, capo stuff?
On a lap steel, like I'll...
Oh, you got a lap steel?
Yeah, I do like C6, you know, the Speaking West tuning.
Yeah.
But I talked to this old dude that played... steel for a sleep at the wheel.
Yeah.
He's like, just drop it down to A6. It sounds beefier. Might take his advice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's cool.
Now let's do some of that now. What about the pedal?
It's like...
That's a whole way. He told me the same thing. It's a whole other world.
Yeah. That and like sitar is just...
Yeah. Sitar. Yeah. Actually, on the... I got a finish that we did together. He played electric sitar. Coral, I think, was the company. It was something from the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Electric sitar. He put it on every tune. He overdubbed. He also put a 12-string, electric 12-string. It's a wild. He used 36 pedals.
That's too much, man. That warped my brain.
It's a Mike Watt record. And it's a dance. We're talking about dancing. This dude is doing a dance. You know what his favorite pedal is, though? Volume.
Yeah.
Really was playing a volume one last night. I don't know what you saw.
Yeah, kicking in.
Yeah, right.
Danny Gatton had like that cool style too.
Oh,
like,
you know Danny Gatton. And from Ohio's favorite guitars. Wow.
Yeah.
So sad about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow, he was incredible. And
he would do like that thing and make it sound like his pinky on the volume and make it sound
I know.
just the swells.
And his left hand too was pretty, but his right hand was amazing.
Oh, that guy's incredible.
What was he, like DC area or something? Like East Coast. That guy was a monster guitarist.
Yeah. There's a ton of them out there, and like kids too.
Man. Right. But that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people always tell me too many bands, too many musicians, too much music.
Is there?
What's the opposite?
Yeah.
It's not enough, you know. Yeah. Fuck that. I think, the more out there, more variety, more flavors, more taste, more interesting thing. So, future plans.
Well, we're playing a show tonight. At a
Star Bar. Near future.
Yeah, and then we're gonna do our 45 release in late January, and then we got to get back in the studio and work on the full length.
Yeah.
And then a tour.
So, what studios are like in Portland? You don't know yet.
I've only played at like two of them. They were actual studios, but they're fun.
Okay.
You
think when you get the album done, you guys are going to try and tour?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell me when you come to SoCal.
I will. That's what my whole point of playing music is, man. Just to, like, get out there and just keep going.
Keep going. What?
You know, because what else are you going to do?
Right. Let's tell the listeners, I got in contact with Jacob after seeing him play when we shared the stage at Dante's six weeks ago. Yeah. Because I want to make a project with him.
Yeah.
I like the way he plays so fucking much, man. It really inspired me, and I've got some music on my floaty when I get some a little time here. Yeah. I'm not going to tour this spring or summer. Because I got to push it. The one thing about touring a lot, it's hard to get things done. Because you're driving around playing, which is good, but it's good to get things going.
Yeah, man. Sometimes
I told you these four albums and the project. Albums.
Yeah.
And so cool, be open-minded about that.
Yeah, man. I want to play all sorts of things, you know, not just one thing.
You know what? That's very inspiring for me.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Jacob. And really, your journey, righteous. Thanks for sharing it with us and being on the show.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we're going to play... this other tune, Can't Get
No Water.
No Water. So it was called No Water, but then
yeah,
Can't Get.
Yeah.
Okay. And good luck. Say cease.
Yeah.
And soon we will be co-conspiring.
We're going to work on something.
We're going to work on it. Soul.
Yep, that's right.
That was your thing. And I'm into it.
Yeah.
Awesome. I'm into it. When you said that, man, it was like, yeah.
You know, because it's different than what everyone's
doing. Yeah.
And you can like...
But actually, my music journey, it's very fundamental. It's way back. James Jamerson is so...
The hook.
So, the hook, yeah. People, that's what he's showing, the index finger, because this is what this man... I think he was Columbia, South Carolina guy. Ends up in Detroit. I think he's on like 200 top... 20 singles.
Yeah.
His name's only on one.
That Poor.
What's it called? Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the bass is gone.
Yeah.
It's funk on the headstock.
Oh, yeah. I heard it was unplayable, too.
Well.
But for anyone with him, his action
is... Big guy was like William Tell.
Yeah. Both. He started out on like...
But you know what? I heard the same thing about Trans Reeds. They were so thick. I think these guys, they're so expressive that if... They bottom out and shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think I got up to a 3 when I was playing saxophone.
Is that right? You did sax too? Yeah. You tell me that.
Yeah.
God damn.
We'll just figure out some other stuff.
Yeah, shit. Put it on. Omni man. But one time this guy dropped my bass and broke the headstock off, and I had to borrow a bass at the gig. And the action was so low, it was impossible.
Yeah.
I can understand high action.
Yeah, you need a little bit so you can grab it.
Yeah,
you
know? But, so much so. The soul thing is righteous.
Yeah, man. Because for every emotion that you've ever had, there's a song that describes it.
That's right. So thanks so much and good luck with the release.
Of course.
And the gig tonight and the album later and then the tour. And we will do the E
and get our thing together.
Exactly.
Here we go. Criminal Guitars with Can't Get No Water. Wow, Pedro Show.
December 20, 2015. Actually, it's now the 23rd. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
need to sit and I wrote this, but it don't mean shit. Why can't I be like you?
Once I knew a girl like blueberry bushes, my footsteps burned holes in the ground. My fear was my leader, I needed to rush. My heartbeat was the only sound.
Thank you. how love is how we put things together. Pain takes things apart. Strength and understanding, courage to mark it, reward it with something tangible. It's a strange way to get through a new city, to find someone that you love and give to a friend. To make something so beautiful you don't want to give it away. Pore over it, ponder it, hold it in slow amazement, then finally part with it. That's what it takes. Yours affectionately, a finished product.
Came in the try to find a way. People want to start a riot, others will stay home staying quiet. The top policeman in the street, it's best to hide and be safe. Just another day, it's an election day. Just another day, we go through. Try to find a way, it's an election day. Try to find a way. Woke up this morning feeling nervous, went through my life without my
into you.
Time.
Show. Started off the third hour of music with Johnny and the Jones from the World's Forgotten Sons. Brand new band. Look, it's not really December 20 now, it's the 23rd. I'm back in Pedro. I didn't have enough time Sunday. My birthday, 58th birthday. I did get to play John Doe's bass though at the gig that night. Then was Thousand Mile Hell Ride. Fuck. 17 and a half hours. Thank God me and my second man, Pete Songerzo, made it safe. Much grateful what. Anyway, the Frights, after that with You're Gonna Hate This. And Do You Like the Animals? Brand new from Elmo and the Sticks. Sophie Scholl versus Surf Nasties from Cosmodrome. Bungee Jumping People Die. Alex Kane. Got to do some T-Rex with him. A Tribute to Dose by Avi Janer Eisenberg. Very kind. Trust a Lies. No. Brand new Disciplina Kichma. Sorry. Zabro Valley. Rock and Roll. Then Trust a Lies. Kim Bowman Kester. Call you out, you know, Disciplina Kichma. I get too happy, but we ain't got enough time. Urian Hackney with The Box, Cold Busted. After that, Unfinished Sketch, 7-inch, Radiation Society, Black Mouse, Super Rainbow, Mr. Tom. New stuff. So that's how Joe Brewer out of Madison, The Desert by the Yoppers, My Capitalist Wife from Mr. Susan out of England. Election Day, Giant Haystacks, Oh Sore Song, Luther and Toby. That's Brother Larry there on the drum, Luther, organ. Love Was In Me, Wild Style Lion with Kim Gordon. I saw Philly last week at that dinosaur thing in New York. I got to do some Stooges. The Good Times Are Over, Laurie Ahmet and John Truby's Rod Zone by Dr. Amazon. Just saw him. Mama D-Day, Chicken Coop, Earthbird Ensemble, and finally, Eastbound Train, brand new from Reg explore. Good people. I'm going to stop now. love Richard Meltzer. Love Jacob Dacre. These 16 gigs we got to do with X. Wow. You count the summer. 58-year-old Watt wishes you all the well. Keep your powder dry.